All right, my friends, thanks for tuning into the podcast, where, as always, we'll discuss the professional literature and the evidence-based protocol as they relate to the effective treatment of clinically significant anxiety symptoms. I'm Chris Lines, licensed psychotherapist and OCD spectrum disorders treatment specialist, and this, well, this is OCD Straight Talk. This podcast is made possible by NoCD. NoCD offers effective, affordable, and convenient OCD therapy. NoCD therapists are trained in exposure and response prevention, or ERP therapy, the gold standard treatment for OCD. With NoCD, you can do virtual, live face-to-face video sessions with one of their licensed, specialty-trained therapists, and they accept most major insurance plans. To find out more about NoCD, visit nocd.com. That's nocd.com to book a free 15-minute call. For people in the state of Kentucky, you can go to kentuckyocd.com. That's kentuckyocd.com and book a session with me. I mean, like, this went on for years, like for a very, very long time. I would kind of go back and forth between what I wanted to do in terms of my career. And there was always this sense of, like, unease and unsettledness. Like, it just didn't feel right. You know, and I would decide I was really, really passionate about counseling or about psychology, and I really, really wanted to pursue, like, a PhD in clinical psychology or a PsyD or whatever it would be. And I maybe would begin the application process and begin telling my family that this is what I'm going to do, and I'm really excited about it, and I feel really good about it. But without fail, and quite predictably, eventually, and usually wouldn't take very long at all after I had told somebody or a group of somebody's, like, this is what I'm doing, this is what I'm going to do, then it was like flip-flopping, right? And I would go to, I don't really actually feel good about that, and I don't feel settled about it, and actually I think I want to pursue pastoral ministry, right? And my dad was a pastor and has been a pastor for over 50 years, and so I sort of grew up in the church, and so I was like, this is what I want to do. And then I would begin kind of thinking about seminary or thinking about what that life is going to look like, and maybe even begin telling people, actually, I think I've changed my mind, and now I'm going to pursue a career in church ministry. But then sure enough, it would flip-flop back. And this went on for a really, really long time. And it's just kind of like this idea that I was always sort of chasing after the carrot of peace and settledness. And whatever I was doing, it wasn't what I was going to do if I didn't feel good or right about it. I had emetophobic fears, fears that I was going to throw up and fears that I was going to be sick. And I would sure enough begin to feel nauseous and panicked that I was going to throw up. And I would begin sort of acting like I was going to throw up. Like, I would go out into my backyard and kind of take some deep breaths as a little boy, because I was, oh, I think I'm going to throw up. I'm going to throw up outside and not in the toilet. So I would sort of go out and walk around in the backyard until I felt a little bit less panicked and maybe a little bit less nauseous. And then I'd come back inside. And like I say, this went on for years. I continue even today to have some emetophobic features in my symptomatology. Like, it's still there. But back then, I had no idea. I had no idea. And like I say, these kinds of features happened for me for years, and I didn't ever recognize them as OCD. And it's interesting that I went through graduate school, and even through graduate school, reading about anxiety-related disorders, reading about obsessive-compulsive disorder, surely reading about emetophobia, I never made the connections in my head between these, you might say, symptomatologic experiences from my childhood, some of which continued on to that day, and the appropriate diagnoses. Like, even then, and research shows the average person is going to suffer from OCD symptoms for 7 years before going to therapy. And that's the average. I remember working with a guy in 2015, and he had suffered for 30 years with intense sexually taboo fears, but never identified within himself, you know what, I need to go to therapy. I need to do something about this. Eventually, thank God, something clicked for him and he went to see a therapist. But the idea and the point is this: the vast majority of people are not able to see the breadth and the depth of their OCD symptoms. They're not able to identify what has long been happening to them as OCD without help. So for me, it wasn't until I actually fell into being an OCD therapist that I began to see clearly not just that I have OCD too, but also that I've had OCD since I was like 8 or 9 years old. Like I've had these kinds of thoughts that were intrusive and that were surely distressing or anxiety producing, and in relationship to which I engaged repetitive behaviors that were aimed at trying to manage or reduce the anxiety, or were aimed at trying to manage or reduce or prevent, you could say, the intrusive thoughts. You know, this went on for me for many, many, many years. And I can't tell you in therapy the number of times I've heard somebody say, I never knew that that was OCD. I've had that for a long, long time. And that's my point. People don't generally recognize the fullness of what's happening for them symptomatologically until they get help. And this is why pillar one says you gotta go to therapy. You can't do it on your own. I mean, that's just the truth of it. For the vast majority of people, they're gonna suffer for years and years before they go to therapy. And that tells you something. One of the things it tells you is that they're not really recognizing what's happening for them. Something else it tells you is that whatever's going on, they can't solve it. They can't deal with it on their own. Eventually, they go to therapy. And that's an important point, because there's lots and lots of people who reach out to OCD Straight Talk and comment, well, I'm not really in therapy anymore, but the podcast is helpful for me, and so on. And I'm delighted, and I truly am delighted that the podcast is helpful for you. And listen to me, you're why I do the podcast, to help you, to clarify your thinking and to orient you to what you need to do on the ground floor in real time to get better. But if you're one of those people who's been helped by the podcast and you listen to the things that I say, listen to me now, you got to go to therapy. You can't do it, generally speaking, on your own. There's no research whatsoever that says, well, if you listen to enough podcasts or read enough books, you're going to be able to deal with this by yourself. Now, maybe at some point in the near future, there'll be some data on that very topic. But as of now, we don't have data that shows you can listen to a podcast or read a book and somehow get through this, solve this issue on your own. All of the data is happening within the context of one person working with a trained other, walking through a structured process. Not just any old structured process, it's a specific structured process, and working to face fears and stop compulsions. This treatment is known as exposure and response prevention. You gotta go see a therapist, and you gotta go see a therapist who's expert in the area of treating anxiety-related disorders. The sad reality is you can't just go to any old therapist. I mean, I continue to hear, not just from listeners and from my own patients, but I continue to hear even from other therapists that a common theory among clinicians is that if we talk about our previous experiences enough, we somehow unpack them and analyze them, we're going to gain insight and understanding into what caused the anxiety to begin with. And it's going to, as a result of talking and analyzing and feeling the feelings, and somehow it's going to get better. But the truth of it is, the last time, I shit you not, the last time, to my knowledge, that there was a legitimate peer-reviewed study that articulated and affirmed this idea was in 1952. Seriously, there have been no studies. I mean, since then, and maybe there were some of those that came out in the 60s, maybe. But since for sure the late 60s, 1966 and beyond, there's been no study. Are you listening? Zero. None. There's been no study that has affirmed that if we talk about this enough, if we analyze our childhood, and if we work through the events and the experiences that were happening for you just before the onset of your anxiety, like somehow it's going to get better. There's no studies that support this kind of intervention, unless this kind of intervention expressly includes the identification and the forced change of maladaptive behaviors, hence exposure and response prevention. All of the studies that are showing this is how we treat OCD, this is how we beat anxiety-related disorders, this is how we do it, all of those studies major on behavior change. And they minor on the talking element of discussing thoughts and the veracity or the truthfulness of those thoughts and the onset or the beginning of these symptoms. They minor on these pieces. So it's just one of those deals. You have to take seriously the reality that you're probably not going to make a whole lot of progress on your own. And I think that raises the whole issue that for some people it's just really scary. It's scary to go to therapy. It's like how many cases have I started where I have to, like, the elephant in the room, the obvious thing that's going on that we're really not talking about is that the patient is really, really nervous. Like, I can tell she's really anxious just about meeting with a therapist. You know, he's super uncomfortable just being here. You know, forget all the intrusive thoughts and forget all the clinical interventions that we're going to engage for the purpose of getting better and how uncomfortable in the process they're going to be. Like, forget all that stuff. Just being here, just meeting the therapist is really, really tough, right? And I think that's something that is worth pointing out, that when you say, well, I'm nervous about going to therapy for this reason or for that reason. I've tried it before and it really didn't work. And now you're telling me to go back to therapy. And it's always so anxiety producing to do that. And I'm really not sure I want to do it. It's like, well, the first thing that needs to be said, well, you're not alone. Like, pretty much everybody that starts therapy, and I might say for whatever reason, certainly for reasons related to feeling anxious, is anxious walking in the door. You're not by yourself. It's really, really normal to walk in the door and feel uncomfortable and feel nervous and unsure about what the process is going to be like and how effective it's going to be and how competent or expert the clinician is. Like, this is a really, really understandable way to feel, but remember, the truth for most people, and when I'm saying most, I mean like a very, very handsome majority. Most people are not going to make a lot of progress without having structured, professional, competent, experienced help. You know, because you're not able to see all that the OCD's doing. You know what I'm saying? It goes back to that concept that when I'll walk through the full psychometric of the Y box with a patient and the 67 questions relative to, does this happen for you or do you have that fear? I can't tell you the number of times I've had a patient say, oh, I never knew that was part of my OCD. That's really common. Like, you're not going to be able to see it all. You know what I'm saying? It's like somehow we can't see it all within ourselves. We need an objective second party to be able to say, oh, I think that's part of the OCD too. And sometimes even then, patients will object and say, nah, I don't think so. I don't think that's really a part of my OCD. I just have this fear because of this or that or whatever it might be. But very typically later in the case, sure enough, they'll come around to it and they'll say, yeah, you know what? I think you're right. That's part of the OCD. You know, let's deal with it. And what that means on the ground floor for the vast majority of patients is, well, you're doing these compulsions sort of on the side, never really recognizing, well, these are compulsions too. Like, I know that my hand washing is compulsive, but like all that researching that I'm doing, or all that seeking reassurance, or the repetitive doctor's visits, all that checking and body scanning, all that avoidance, all those hours a day of distraction, like, we're not necessarily ourselves able to objectively identify all of the intrusive thoughts and compulsive patterns without, like I say, structured expert help. And so it becomes really, really important to avail yourself to that help, right? To work with somebody who knows what he or she is doing, who's done this before and done this before quite a bit, right? Who wields evidence-based protocols and treatments that work, right? Who can help you to identify and stop the compulsions in order to make the progress that you want to make. But again, you got to go to therapy. And then when you're at therapy, like I say, you need to be doing exposure and response prevention. That exposure piece is essential to making the progress. If you're thinking that somehow you can win this battle without meaningfully facing the fears, I think that you've drunk somebody's Kool-Aid. I think the truth is that's just not the reality. You're not going to be able to beat your anxieties without facing them again in a meaningful, prolonged, and repetitive way. You're just not. And so working to attack the anxiety, working to face these fears head on and prolongedly, and you know what I mean by that. If you've been listening to the podcast for a little while, you know what I mean by prolongedly. That is to say 45 unbroken minutes. Sit there and fight. Sit there and tolerate the distress. Allow the thoughts to happen. Let the anxiety climb. You know what I'm saying? Like, anxiety, if it gets really, really, like really, really bad, and a little worse than that, and worse still, the anxiety can't hurt you. Like, eventually, after you've had your panic attack and it's gone on for a minute or for 5 minutes or for an hour or for a couple of hours, and you're having this super intense anxiety and it's not going away, well, eventually, it's going to start going away. You have to choose to fight through the prolonged exposure, recognizing the intrusive thoughts are thoughts. Maybe they represent something that's true and real and will happen in the future. Maybe they don't. Recognizing that often thoughts prove to be untrue predictions of what's going to happen, and we have to be able to sit with them and tolerate them without engaging the compulsion. You got to go to therapy. You gotta do your exposure work, and for heaven's sake, you gotta stop the compulsion. Well, that's it for another episode of OCD Straight Talk. Feel free to reach out with any questions you might have to chrislines04@gmail.com. If you found the podcast helpful, consider giving it a 5-star rating or subscribing to OCD Straight Talk for structured help with your anxiety or OCD symptoms.